to the Six of Cups. This is a meaningful show that we have for you this evening. This is recorded on September 11th of 2019. It's a roundtable panel with Alan Drake and Brother Joe DeZerman. We're talking about, of course, the events that occurred back in 2001. We come into it from a spiritual, a synchronistic, and an alternative historical way of looking at it. It's a really great conversation. The ultimate thrust of it is that we need to be of service when it comes to this aspect or feature of our reality. There's one aspect of us that should never serve. There's another aspect of us that should be ready to die to serve. And we touch on that a bit in this. So with that being said, this is the part of the show where those who have donated at the executive or associate executive level producer will get their shout out read. And without further ado, we're going to jump right on into the episode. I will further ado by saying, if you do like the show, any amount, I've gotten some contributions that some people would consider smaller, and I really think that you should not hesitate, even if it's every week or so, you buy me a cup of coffee, buy me a beer, which I'll just buy two cups of coffee with, or whatever. Buy me what you think the show is worth for the episode that you're listening to. I hope that you will also appreciate that every bit that you spend is going to be tallied and kept up, and you will eventually earn the right to create a character in the value-for-value role-playing game. And that is the last further ado. Without any further of those, away we to the show. Hey, and welcome back to the Six of Cups. This is Six of Cups number 9. Tonight we have a round table with Alan Drake and Brother Joe DeZerman. And this is me, a cult fan, yours truly, XOXOXXXO. And tonight it's the 9/11 show. It's September 11th, 2019. Before we go further, though, let's get some hellos from our round table.
Hey, guys.
Hello and good evening.
I'm promising you we are the best-looking roundtable on radio. You just need to believe me. It's in the Mueller Report, as you know. So in this episode, it's 9/11, guys. So let's, you know how we do. We just kind of let the spirit take us. And I want to just start this episode off just for the posterity, because this is the thing to do right now. This is a service episode. This is an episode of service. This is a day of service. We are entering into this conversation with light enough hearts, with a heavy enough bearing and grasp of the material. And the three of us are able to look at this also from the occult, spiritual, esoteric. But what mostly we're using those talents for that I just mentioned, the three aforementioned, is to bring healing, is to bring justice, is to bring some positivity, or whatever we call that, in the greater sense of evolution. All right. So I just want to set the tone for this. And we all know that's probably the best thing we can possibly do from our humble little corner here. That's if we can do anything, that's the thing to start with. So that's how we're starting this. So guys, Alan, youngest one here, where were you on 9/11?
Well, I was I'd just come home from Atlanta, me and my wife, and I was living in Nashville at the time. And I remember waking me up and saying, "You got to see this. You got to see this." And I remember when, as soon as I saw it, I realized something was off. The first building had been hit. And while I was standing there watching, the second plane hit. And I knew this is completely wrong. Everything about this, top to bottom, is wrong.
Joe, what about you, man? I feel you, Alan.
That would be 2001 was the summer after I graduated high school. And I remember I was sleeping still. I used to sleep really late.
So y'all were both sleeping. Interesting. Yeah. That's a rare correlation.
Yeah. I was in bed and my sister came in. I was still living at my parents' house. I think I was 18 or 19. And she was like, "A plane just hit the World Trade Center." And I was like, "What are you talking about?" And I thought it was like a little, I figured she had to have meant like a passenger, like a little, you know, like a 2-person, 4-person kind of plane. And I also like tuned in time for the second event.
Well, I was in math class. That sounds like it was intense for that. You were watching the footage. I was in math class. You know, it's like people like to, you know, I like to joke, it's bad enough that I was in math class and now I got this going on here. I mean, I remember that. So I was in a special situation. I went to some alternative schools when I was younger, and during the rotation of that period of my life, I was actually getting ready to leave one of these schools and just go back into, you know, normal quote unquote society. Right. And right. They had put me into line to be in the special, like they had housing in the community that would be off the campus of the school there. And so I was on that was my visit to the off campus community to test it out and probably be allowed to go into that. Of course, I was also leaving the school the next month. So my whole point is the thing was, it was this weird confluence of unnecessary, but as you know how we do, necessary events. And I'm sitting there in the community house just watching these people look at the screen. And I was commenting earlier with some people and some friends of mine from my autonomy course. Joe, I know I've mentioned that to you. I watched them switch. I could see them change. I could see a flip. I could see something. I feel like I'm echoing something that I heard in both of your sentiments. When you, Joe, you said you watched that TV and you could just, I could feel it. You were saying like something was different. And Alan, you said the same thing with like, you're like, wow, something was off. I could watch this woman. I remember she was like the caretaker person, right? Because we were teenagers. I was like 15, no, 16 at the time. Going on 17 because my birthday is 11 after 11. To wrap up the story, I'm there in this house and I just watch these people staring at this thing. I didn't feel a grip of fear. This was just kind of like if you saw a war in Iraq or something.
Right.
Just pick a random example. But like I just could see people. I have this sense of these things. And we're going to get into this as we go forward now. But do you guys believe that there's a lot of – it's common now to say that there's something not – going traditional, like let's just jump right into this. How do you, Alan, view the event as far as you understand? We can use the CIA made up word conspiracy theory or alternative history or personal learnings. I know you're interested in these things, so how do you? Sure. Let's jump into this stuff. I know I'm with the right crowd.
Well, I mean, you know, you're talking about an event like 9/11, which is a vertical shock to society. There's not a level of society that you can't hear.
No, I'm sorry. I'm Joe's trying to show me something on the screen and I can't read it. I'm gonna have to edit this out. I can't, brother. I can't.
Oh, read sorry. It. I was just saying, Alan's audio sounds a little bit low.
Oh, does it? I can hear him fine.
Really? Okay. Because you sound really clear. It's just to me, it sounds like there's a big difference in the audio.
Alan, do you want to try speaking a little more into the mic, please?
Sure.
It just sounded like you're kind of far away. Sorry for interrupting.
No, good looks, man. I bet you made the show better that way. Thank you. I didn't. You know what? Don't worry about it. We'll just scrap that and we'll start again. Let me just ask the question. Thank you, Joe. That's probably good housekeeping. Thank you. Okay. Hi, St. Cyprian. Okay. So my point is, let's just do that again. 3, 2, 1. So, Alan, what do you think about this kind of other way of seeing the events? Like, how do you view what's unfolded? What's your opinion take? What's your reality on this? Reality tunnel, so-called. I believe you're on mute, Alan. I think the thing got muted. All right, we're going to do this third time. The CIA is on it. Joe, you're right.
We talked about it earlier.
All right, let's get the techno gremlins. We're going to kick their ass in 3, 2, 1. So, Alan, what's your take on your own personal perspective on the events that have transpired? Everyone has a different way of looking at it. There's everything from the people who swallow, they bend over and swallow everything that's given to them. And then there's people like Kent Bain, who's written the most dangerous book in the world. So where are you on that spectrum? And what's your take on this? Let's give us something to chew on here.
I've been down a lot of rabbit holes with 9/11 and, where I'm at these days is it's such a massive event. It's hard to get a read on any like 9/11 truth. It's I'm at a point now where I look at the event and I see it's almost like a black box. You can't see what actually occurred there. And so many people have projected so many things into the event itself and attached so many agendas to it and so many narratives that it's just this sort of like a almost like a Rorschach test in a lot of ways.
When you there's definitely that aspect of it. The conspiracy getting like, what do you call it? Like a mirror maze.
Yeah. Like a wilderness of mirrors.
Joe, what do you think about? Because I think that's an apt. I think that's something that we definitely need to avoid tonight, that we need to talk about only the things that we can prove. And that's going to cut out some big things like planes and stuff, because some people don't know if it's missiles or this, that. And I wasn't there.
So, the whole no planes crowd was a thing for a long time.
Well, yeah, and that's okay, because I mean, like, this is a nebulous topic, and I'm the kind of guy, like Miguel would say, run from those who found the answers. I'm not saying that we don't want truth, but hear me when I say I don't know. So that we're coming from a fair perspective here, something of inquisitive and true nature. So we're trying to talk about, like, we know they found one passport, but Joe, let's go with what you know for now. Let's fairly share the thing, because I want to draw back tonight. So what do you guys, Joe? What do you have to say to this to start?
The whole thing is so almost like mystical. It's like I was listening to the newest episode of A Culture earlier today. And they were talking, I think Ryan was comparing it to like almost like the JFK thing.
Well, I mean, JFK is implicit in this, but go ahead. Yeah.
Well, just in the sense that he didn't really touch on this aspect of it, but that it, to explain any explanation for it is absolutely insane. The fact of like, what actually happened, the official story is crazy. Directed energy weapons is crazy. A missile is crazy. Saying, Alan, it's like there's so much to it that it's like,
is it really crazy, or is it crazy that this even happened in the first place?
That's what I mean. The whole thing is crazy. Like,
yeah. I see. I agree with you then.
It's like you can't grok it because it's so massive.
Well, I mean, like, to the effect, like, that's what we're going to do tonight. And Ryan's right to say that it is a JFK event, because, like, it's the same thing. That's, you know, it's first of all, let's look at it for what it is, because why is it like that? It's a trauma ritual. It's something that is used to, it's kind of like let's as above, so below this. What's the most basic way you can just, like, if you don't want a child to do something, You hit it, maybe, like, to not touch a stove. Like, well, I'm talking from a primal. We got to look at, like, really simple symbols here. You might, like, stunt it. Or how do you stop? How do you teach fleas, right? You put a barrier over them, and they learn to stop jumping at a certain height. You use some force or inhibitor, right? It doesn't have to be, like, a direct form of physical violence. It can be some kind of systemized training violence. But the point is that maybe there's something about cycles in the human psyche that at certain points in the calendar of every, maybe say 100 years, if you perform a particular act and you're behind that, you channel a large amount of, say, from the reptilian brain of the culture all up through the chain. Take it from there. Alan, what do you think about that kind of stuff?
I'm kind of at a loss right now. It's like, it is big, and it's like, you know, it's the trauma of it is, it's this public brutality. It's learned helplessness is where I keep coming back to with this, is that it's this thing that happened in public, brutalized the world basically on TV by murdering thousands of innocent people in front of everybody's eyes. And, you know, in a display of arrogant power, and then just like the JFK cover up, like the Warren Report, the 9/11 Commission, was not allowed to look into certain topics, certain nations, and it was the fix was in. It's just, if you were paying attention, it was obvious from the word go that the fix was in, that the crime scene was cleaned up, all of the material, all of the wreckage was shipped off and sold and buried. They paved the roads with the rubble, basically. It's it's that sort of effect of growing up in a home of, domestic violence and not being able to do anything about it. Having a parent go after the other parent, your siblings and you, and just being completely out of control and nothing you can do about it.
Well said. Definitely. I agree with that sentiment. Joe, what do you think?
It's funny. I didn't think this was going to be as like difficult to talk about as it actually is, you know, because we all hold such, you know, we all think we hold strong opinions on it. Mm-hmm. But I think just like trying to talk about magic, it's really kind of hard to put into words. I moved to New York in like 2008, I think, something like that. And It's a really strange, it was really strange to be there post 9/11 like that. I had some neighbors and I remember they had on, it was probably like 8 years ago now or something like that. But they invited us to a party on for September 11th. And we went up on the roof of our building, and from the roof of our building, you could see into Manhattan, and they were just telling stories about like what it was like when they were there for it. And it was probably the single most awkward and uncomfortable party I've ever been to in my entire life, because everyone had such like traumatic, crazy stories.
I mean, that's a really, you know, from a shamanistic perspective, you can see that as a really beautiful, and I mean this from, you got to be the kind of people that I think listen to this to understand that, like, I mean, these are, it's beautiful that it's that they were all able to share like that and that you were able to kind of experience that. But yeah, at the same time, it sucks that it's there without forfeiting the idea of like without bad, you know, no good, that kind of, without that. I mean, this is not an excuse. This was done on purpose. Yes.
Sure. Yeah.
Of course.
And we really don't know who did it, but it was obviously leveraged for several different, from getting the world basically to feel fear and feel xenophobic from this angle of the world, to having a war after war after war after what, you know what I'm saying? Sure. Bring us to the present day future, not just the past tense. Unfortunately, true. And also it brought us the security state. It brought us like Dick Cheney, you know, I mean, and you got to realize that like he was in a different level of government than Bush was at that day. Bush was a sitting duck, you know, angel is next kind of stuff for people who know what I'm talking about. And like all I'm saying, because like, you know, just to keep it quick, like, so, I mean, this whole thing wasn't just like that stuff. It was also like Kent Bain brings out, like there's all these different numerological coincidentialities that countless people have dug up by now. And the idea is that this was a ritual. This was performed. I mean, like, let's try to get into as many occult aspects of this as we can, because that's what we do here. And I'm glad you mentioned a culture. I bet he'll have someone on talking about Tool's new album. Just saying, like, it's no accident you mentioned Ryan. But anywho, you know how we do. So let's talk about the first cool occult thing. And I say cool because I mean, like, this sucks that this happened. But let's deal with it like occult adults. And Alan, what's one of the main things that right now you can think of that you've seen, maybe S.K. Bain has talked about, Lavenda might have talked about, Dr. Joseph Farrell might have talked about, or who in your travels, whomever. What's some of the more occult stuff that you've seen that pops out to you for 9/11? Or it could be, let's start there. Sorry, go ahead.
Just the heightened awareness of history and things like the Bush family and their probable involvement in the event. Heightened awareness of the intelligence state, and then, you know, the follow-on. Patriot Act and stuff like that has people looking into the symbols of our society. And I remember one of the first things that popped up after 9/11 was the Information Awareness Office, or IAO, or YAO. I think we all kind of know where that's going.
Wow,
brilliant.
The symbol of the Information Awareness Office was an eye and a pyramid.
Dude, Joe, you're going to have to do better. I'm sorry, like, Alan just, like, knocked it out of the park. You're going to have to follow up after that one, dude.
Yeah, that's really wild that you bring that up. I've just finished listening to John Keel's Eighth Tower.
Oh.
And I'm currently going back through the Mothman Prophecies. I listened to the Mothman Prophecies, then the Eighth Tower, and now I'm going back through because I realized there was so much overlap between the two books. And I believe it's in the Eighth Tower Keel introduces the IAO. It was something I was listening to recently, and they're talking about it. Couldn't have been, because that was way back then. It must have been something else, but that blew my mind. EIO, like that. Mm-hmm. I was just like, what?
Well,
that's so
fitting.
So in your face, it's just so blatant.
That was probably one of the most striking, obvious, like almost uncomfortable making a surveillance state type occult ties, because I think so many of them are kind of like contrived and convoluted, but that is a weird level of, like, it's a very specific type of magic.
You're talking about like NASA patch weird, or army, yeah, like occult army patch weird.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like mind, like, your own. Yeah.
Like project, like gateway projects, and like doing astral projection and like the darker, weirder stuff.
Yes. Well, you know, I mean, like, and I mean, like, we have, what's his name? Not Russell Targ. Dean Radin talks about some stuff like that. And then you got people from, like, the Radin spectrum all the way over to, like, the Montauk hardcore, like, I saw stuff. Peter Moon's, you know, something came out of a chair because some psychic thought it hard enough, and this was in New York. And so, you know, I mean, maybe that's real. I don't know. And that's why we kind of, like, want to get back to, like, so that's one of the many kind of like Crowleyan ties there, the EIO, yeah. Or what you could say is, like, you know, in line with that current, at least. And there are so many different 93 ties. The for the listener to do this, because we're not going to hash them all out. This is just a part of the show to show you that this stuff is right there. Kent Bain, Sherwood Kent Bain, S.K. Bain, on Amazon, you get this. Most dangerous book in the world, it's called. Literally, that's what it is. It has a foreword by Peter Levenda, a name that should be recognizable by most people who listen to this. And yeah, I'll tell you one that I really like. I don't know if this is photoshopped or not, you know, but I always see that picture of the man falling out of the window with the hangman's legs. And That really gets it for me. That's I'm like, dude, the archetypes are, it's like puking archetypes up, and it's like archetype vomit right now, because the portals are being torn open. We'll get into that now. So but it's like, it's just like vomited up like a chunk of carrot or like a chunk of the hangman archetype. And I'm just like, oh, that there it is, you know, there it goes. And so, and what an unfortunate individual, the choice between burning up in the tower to fall to your doom. You know, I mean, that really is the epitome of the tiger and the strawberry. You know what I'm saying? But or the spiritual, you know, crucifixion of spirit into matter, as this hangman archetype allegedly is. But anyway, so interestingly, if we said that about the spirit being encased in matter, because that's what we're getting into now, that fucker was a portal. Pardon my language. I'll just click the explicit box on this one. That was a portal. Go. Talk.
Jumping back for one second to the idea of the hanged man falling, what I think is interesting is, let's assume that there's a real photo and it hasn't been photoshopped. The chances, I would have to imagine that if you snapped a photo at the right time, almost every single person falling from a building would probably be in the hanged man position at some point. And I think that's interesting to think that they caught that on film. Because, like,
then probably, they could, like,
statistically, it seems like it would, you would at least make that shape with your body accidentally.
I don't know. Interesting. I don't know. I haven't. How many bodies have you seen fall from buildings?
None. But if you think if you're falling, you just be moving your arms, you would just happen to be in that position.
I feel you. Let's call some. Let's just say, like, I would want to see some data before I made my mind on that. But I feel you. That's a possibility for sure.
I'm not trying to take away from it. I'm just saying it's interesting that they caught that on film.
But and you raise a good point, because they could have seen that dude, and like that could be a still from a video, and he made that flailing motion and caught it at that moment, and they said, "Ah, that's the one."
Right.
Like that. That's a whole other level of like juju, you know. I know that you guys both like have you must have some people who at least have people who are lost in this. So like it touches us all, you know, and we'll get into like the personal stuff a little later in the show. It's getting kind of weird, but it's here. So we're pro. So one thing that I guess I want to say is the portal aspect that we're talking about, because if like the A-bomb, we talk about that in shows like as a potential bringer in of whatever that is. And we don't know, but maybe this is an idea we do entertain. As a ritual, what was, you know, what do you guys feel, who was being called in here?
I mean, it's going to punch a hole in the veil, so to speak, that many people passing at once in one play through such a violent act. And who knows, you know, how long that rift can last, what kind of temporal effects it has, you know? So it could be a big bleeding wound sitting right there in the middle of New York still. Who knows?
Wicked true. Like, I'm glad you said it like that. There's a quick to affirm that there's a Final Fantasy anime in which, like, the main place is called Wonderland. So you already know I'm, like, gung-ho to the max. Final Fantasy, Wonderland, what else is there? Anime, yeah. And the whole idea is that the beginning, and this is not a spoiler, it's a setup for the entire thing. It's like Laura getting murdered and wrapped in plastic and being discovered as such. The sky rips open into a temporal rift as of which you speak. And there's a lot of like 9/11-esque vibe around it. So I'm glad that you said that, because that is art expressing what we really try to. And you can say that shit in fiction, that we're not really skirting around it here, but I don't have the money Silverstein has yet, but you know, anyways, so Joe, what do you make about the portal aspect of this stuff?
I couldn't guess if like what type of entity, let's say it's a portal. I can't guess their end game. And I couldn't imagine who they'd be trying to contact with it, because it's just beyond me. But I was going to say, it does remind me of that, what they talk about in the Illuminatus trilogy, I don't think it's transcendental illumination. Maybe that's what it is, when they talk about when so many people die, the energy that's released from those people can force someone to reach become illuminated, or
that might be it. Yeah, it's been a while since I've read the book. I think you're on to something.
It's like what they're dealing with in Ingolstadt. Like,
I was thinking at the end of Leviathan. There, you're talking about when they're exactly at the rock show there with the you know, American Medical Association.
I think that it's like they were dealing with like the sex acts, like the earlier in the series, they're dealing with like the kind of like sexual illumination, when they're kind of getting into like the satanic, like thelemic initiation when they're in Chicago.
And he's like, he's got the noose coming down after the clock. Yeah.
And it's just interesting how Wilson kind of like padded that. And that book to this day still freaks me out.
Okay, so we're going to come back to
portals.
We're going to come back from that reality tunnel to this interdimensional 9/11 portal. And next up, Tom with the weather. So basically, I think that I saw the weirdest thing by this guy called Chiron Last. It was one of those weird like 9/11 videos, and he basically tried to like convince you that you saw like a Doctor Who TARDIS. Like, I just had to bring that up, because that's actually something that someone put out there. But we'll jump back from portals because I think that there's something to be said. I've seen some interesting videos about the wailing sounds at Ground Zero, and those are far from not spooky. You know, it's if that's real or not doctored videos.
It kind of reminds me of in like a global stage type thing, it reminds like talking about portals or doing types of ritual that it's kind of hard to understand from our perspective.
Yeah.
It reminds me of what was that stuff they did that crazy, like it was somewhere in, what is that island that they built in the Middle East?
Not Dubai.
Is it Dubai? Was it the Atlantis Hotel where they did that massive, like, that massive like fireworks show,
the installation,
yeah, and it was like,
I'm glad you brought that up because I'm gonna say
fish god, I forget his name.
You say again, King Rishon.
What was the fish god's name?
Oh, Dagon. Oannes or Dagon?
Oannes, that's the one. Like that one kind of felt a little bit more obvious. You know, you'd be like, okay, that's what they're doing.
I remember Chris Knowles talking about that, which Mr. Loring Knowles is the perfect segue into this part of the thing here. Liz Fraser, Cocteau Twins, bringing the crazy synchronistic magic. They did this thing in the Millennium Dome, I believe it was twice a day, every day for 100 days or something to that effect. And it was bringing down a tower with another tower inside of it. This freaking thing happened. People don't know that. They think that some freaking terrorists.
Who was doing that?
Liz Fraser of the Cocteau Twins. But my spiel goes as such. They think that these terrorists took these planes in like at an altitude where you can't control things with the wind shear. Oh my goodness gracious. So anyways, the whole point is this. She did a ritual. 100 days in a row. Because you do that just for no reason. So you can read it on Secret Sun blog, but basically we're talking about some high freaking crap here. And I'm not saying, you know, I don't know. There's the weird like part, like a Robert Anton Wilson morality aspect where you could say, did this need to happen? And I don't like to say yes or no to, you know, I'm just like, wow, what do these events need to happen? Could this have been prevented? Could any of us have done it? Would our lives have wanted it not to happen from a cosmic perspective? I'm asking some real shit here.
There's a certain aspect to these kinds of events, I think, that's organic. That just sort of grows out of the circumstances, like grows out of the actions.
Yeah.
The players on the global stage, we till the soil, the plant grows kind of thing.
The perfect confluence of events. And we forget not the astrological or what you would call the dreaming, you know, with all that use of the 911 too, you know, I mean, you instantly have the law and order aspect. So you're bringing in the security state. It's on the number of the number you use for security. It's the two numbers that are not the number of perfection, which is 10, you know, it's also a, gosh,
to get help from the police.
Exactly, the point, right. And of course, the police with the firemen at the station, you got the fire and the pole on the ice pole of the equation. Yeah, exactly, ice and fire. And so, yeah, for real, because you got the Democrats and the other ones, you know, whatever, the Republican, you got the right and the left, you got the Pepsi, the Coke, you got the, you know, yada, yada.
Yeah, so anyway,
yeah, sure, that's definitely part of it, for sure. So basically, Joe, take us to a point where we can actually look at this from a way that we can do something as people who are into the esoteric. How can we help regular people understand this material? It's an important issue to all of us. It should be understood.
The first thing that comes to mind is that you have to reinforce the fact that you're not to question an official story does not make you a crackpot. I think it's, you know, we can talk about this and we don't have to say that the Bush family orchestrated it because they're friends with the Saudis. We don't have to say that, you know, it was some rogue state. I mean, we do know that the level that they're at, like, I think at a base level, the action, the imperialistic actions of the United States in its history, like you were saying, Alan, kind of like paved the way. You know, they made, there's a lot of people that hate the imperialism of this country. And if you've had a boot on your neck for, you know, 10 generations or, you know, but not 10, you know what I mean? Sure. Like, it's not outrageous to think that a group of people might want to exact revenge.
It would be a perfect cover story too, from a different vantage point.
Exactly. But the interesting thing is that I think that most people don't have a problem with the type of imperialism that this country practices. So to try to get the mass population to almost like sympathize with a rogue group that were exacting revenge against an imperialistic beast, that's a hard thing to think. And I think what it actually did was it just caused people to have Islamophobia, like to be afraid of anyone that's brown. And it's interesting that like the official story doesn't resonate with the way most people look at the world. And they almost, like, the way that most people in the world look at things is almost more simplistic than the story we were given.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how the rest of the world looks at things either, because I don't actually have contact with people who don't really speak English.
Right.
Whole other interesting thing to this. Like, they're like, wow, those Americans are dumb. They can't even see that this is what people do with power throughout history. How foolish are they? They believe it on Game of Thrones, but they won't understand it in their own lives. I think that people do get this kind of stuff on a certain level. Because you feed it to them through the movies, through the television, they kind of like the switch is hit. That's like that conspiracy aspect sated. Their life's not the TV. You know, I don't know. Do you hear what I'm saying by saying that, though? Like, it's it's an interesting way to, I don't know. I'm just making that shit up. I'm just making that up. Let's talk about TV and 9/11. Some strange things happen.
Sure. The smoking gunman pilot.
Yeah.
I'm glad you started with that.
That's the one. I think that's the biggest one.
Take us there.
They ran a whole pilot before the event, where the whole plot was flying a plane into the World Trade Center by remote control.
And that was the X-Files spinoff, right?
Correct. Yes. Dean Haglund and company. Yeah, Tom Braidwood, Dean Haglund, and oh man, I'll figure it out later. I'm not even going to edit it in. I'll just figure it out later. I mean, I've seen so many X-Files, I can't believe I can't remember it right now. Haglund. Anyway, so the point is neither here nor there. What's another one besides, let's get this one out of the way, besides Neo's Passport and The Matrix with 9/11, September 9/11, 2001? That's the classic one. And that's,
well, you know, all the discussion of weaponized airplanes leading up to 9/11, then the event happens, and then afterwards on the news, they talked about how no one could ever picture this having ever happened.
Right.
They never imagined anything like this would ever be, you know.
Meanwhile, they're at home reading a copy of The Medusa Touch from 1974 or whatever it was, 73, 74, which is that, I mean, this is a tried and true concept. They actually built the towers. They have video of people talking about the towers saying these could withstand airplanes hitting them. This is back like right before the attacks. It's 2001. Proud workers at the buildings talking about what their function is there. I help clean the windows. I do this. It's real on the street people talking about their pride in the building that they love, because it's a center. It's supposed to be a symbol of this. It certainly is the symbol of America's international monetary powerhouseness, right, of the empire, of which New York is the symbol of the empire. It's in fact the empire state, and it has the most iconic, besides the Twin Towers, the Empire State Building, which I will quickly add, Cannabox this month, hello foot, is doing is doing Empire State Building as their pipe. That's weird, right? Can't they the pipe company that I like, they're doing the care box. They're using that. Their tagline is New York's most iconic building. I'm like, you guys got balls. So anyways, I just came back from New York. It's a beautiful building. But yeah, they do have this, they do have recorded people talking about, yeah, the airplanes could never do a thing to this. It would be like a mosquito net being pinched by a pencil. I thought that was like, wow, I know exactly how, what that looks like. That would make a little hole in the building, and then the rest of the demolition charges would have to go off, so the building goes down. So, I mean, I'm not a scientist, but I'm not a jackass who hates truth either. So I got to find some middle ground and learn the science and learn what I can of that and learn that people are operating at a dark level that leaves one single passport on the street. One. That's what you use as your evidence. The black box in the plane burned up.
The bullet on the stretcher.
Yep. A bullet on a stretcher. You know, Dick Cheney. Anyways.
JFK assassination, the pristine bullet they found.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I was like, I don't know about that 9/11, but okay.
Well, yeah, it was like the passport. You find this pristine passport just laying on the ground.
Oh, good. And there's your analogy.
There's your big piece of evidence. And then with the JFK assassination, they find this bullet just laying on the stretcher. It's supposedly the single bullet. And it's
exactly.
It looked like it didn't hit anything.
Exactly. So, Joe, one other piece of media, because I think we need to dig into this a bit here. That's kind of important to get into.
The first one that comes to my mind is the Back to the Future 2. I know there's a lot more, but that's the one that's literally on the tip of my tongue, where the towers fall, right? But it's in reverse.
It's on the TV, and Marty's dad's upside down. Crispin freaking Glover.
Yeah, and now the ties in with the tie in with Biff and Trump.
Yeah. Oh yeah, for sure.
You gotta check that out.
There are people out there who do crazy work that borders on the line of La Salalia, but and what's that pattern recognition one that I'm trying to figure out, right? What's the word? You know the one. What's the freaking word for that? When you see things everywhere, there's the word. Anyways, people are shouting it at home into their things. Thank you, podcast listener. You are awesome. You know the word. So podcast listeners, thank you, Six of Cups listeners. It's not just anyways, this is the only podcast you listen to, which good for you. Good for you. Good for you. So anyways, I'm talking about the fact that Marty has the thing where the boots are upside down for the view for the dad there. You see the towers go upside down on the thing. And there's something that they say at the same time, which is very leading. But of course, Trump being president right now with the Biff thing, it's no accident with the whole Trump Tower 2016 Tower card. The whole Pepe, I mean, the fucking world's exploding memetically. I think this is a product, too, of at the stage that we're at with all the electronic, the information. We're sharing information at this rate right now. This was not what we were. We have pin precision types of minds that we like to share this stuff with. This is affecting the subconscious. So bringing it back down, that kind of stuff, that future art. Was it future art? Was it, you know what I mean? Was it Spielberg? Was Spielberg in the Illuminati? Or was he just some guy who was kind of like Edward Casey, tapping into the mainframe, seeing the thing that, you know, I mean, Trump's a lifelong Democrat. I mean, it's easy to switch a party and slide into presidency. At these days. But I hope you can take what I just said and go with that. It's get that pinata.
This is something I thought of earlier, but it's still, I think it's relatable. You were asking about ritual and what was going on with this whole thing and the different types of explanations we've seen. And it struck me as kind of like the idea of the towers coming down being getting your rooks taken. And they talked about when JFK was assassinated, the king being killed. It was a king hit.
Nice.
And flip that into a Philip K. Dick world, that the empire never ended, and where time is actually moving in reverse. It's like, I don't know. This, it literally is just a thing to think about because it, I don't have an explanation for it, but it's like we just watched the last two moves of a chess game happen.
That's, yeah, that's sort of great. That's awesome.
But I just don't know what that would look like going forward or possibly backward, depending on how you look at what I just said.
I think I'd sit down if I weren't already sitting down. So I don't know how to double sit down, but I'm going to do that right now. Listen, so if we're gonna say that we can speak of it meaningfully, we kind of have to take the PKD reality tunnel and let it kind of like, you know, do its thing. Because like from like where we're at right now, it would seem there's a society full of people who have had like not only a consumer lifestyle, not only the Marshall McLuhan pumping full of like advertisements and subliminal desires and their dreams being messed with and everything, but like we also are now like from like age one of this century, you know, what we call 2000s, they have seen devastation from the pinnacle of the mountain, you know, New York City, you know, the Big Apple, the Apple to Venus, the heart, the big heart of the world. Two things falling down, two pillars being, two candles on an altar being burned down. I think that all of this trauma merits a way of understanding it on the deepest levels possible, that no matter what the actual story is, a story is a story. And if we can come up with a strong enough story that helps people, that's within the realm of the most good and true, whatever that is, we should start telling that story here tonight, at least, or add to it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's like, how do we move forward in this world? You know, we live in a post 9/11 world now. And there's no telling, you know, if there's ever going to be any justice, if there's ever going to be any kind of reconciliation. And these days, I'm banking on not, you know. There was the Reichstag fire in Germany. It went unpunished, basically. All of these things just tend to become part of history, and we have to find ways to live in the aftermath of it and move forward. One of the things that gives me hope is like my son, I look at my son, this event is just part of the landscape for him. It doesn't really affect him. It's like Pearl Harbor was for me.
Ah, yes.
Me when I was a kid about Pearl Harbor, I would have been like, I do not give a shit about Pearl Harbor. That's some kind of history thing. You know, I didn't look at Japanese as sneaky people that were going to attack me all of a sudden or anything like that.
Yeah.
I think the same thing holds true for a lot of our youth, you know, and I think they see through a lot of the propaganda that gets thrown at them the same way that I saw through a lot of the propaganda that got thrown at me. And yeah, just watching the kids gives me a lot of hope that we can move forward in this world.
You know, I like hearing that. I really like hearing that. I think it's easy. I think it's easy because like there's so much, you know, there's so much power beyond the event. Like again, like the numbers, flight 77, 93, you know, I mean, you can see videos that were released. Joe, did you see the videos released on Twitter today showing how you can literally see it's not a plane flying into the Pentagon? By the way, the towers being the money, the Pentagon being the war.
I mean, it's, I did not see that one today.
Oh, dude, it's fact, man. Like, that's one of the things. Like, that was not a plane. You can look at the hole in, like, it's like a scar in the land in, like, Scranton, wherever it's in Pennsylvania, wherever 93 went down. It's, like, just, like, this, like, little bit of rubble and, like a wing. It's
debris, it's, like, scattered across miles for that flight.
Yeah.
That's the signature of a plane being shot down.
And I'll literally say it like, I'll say it like this, because I think it's, if you're a reasonable, if you can use reason, what I say is true. If you don't look at this evidence fairly and you're trying to get a point about like whether you love a country or not, you hate America if you don't look at this with clear eyes. If you just let someone feed your mind with a lie, you don't even love your country enough to have the balls to look into what's real. I mean, and I think a lot of people are actually at the point where they're doing that now. So passionate words for a passionate time. I think that I'm going to be pleased by the next 6 years of my life, our lives. I think people will come around to this. I think that spell is dissipating because we have enough white magicians thrice here to be able to just, you know, it's what we don't really know. But like, there's obviously enough that if we can just, you know, weaken that vibration enough, I certainly say that it can be diffused so that people are no longer clouded by its mystique.
Just knowing it for the lie, you know, just knowing it for the lie. That's all we have to know about it.
Yeah, man.
We have to know the specifics. It's like, you know, the JFK assassination. It's a big open secret. Everybody knows that it was a hit and that the fix was in from the word go. And same thing with 9/11. It was a hit and the fix was in from the word go, you know.
Joe, what do you think about World Trade Center 7? Because, Ellen, that's obviously, we agree on that. Joe, World Trade Center 7, no agenda show. Who at this show, at all four of these shows, we love dearly and think, feel kind of giddy talking, like, you know, they're an awesome show. So on that show, they have a great jingle and it says, WTC7 won't go away. And that's to symbolize, just like how we have that English reporter, British reporter, talking about how we've just got report that Building 7 is going down, and they have a video of Building 7 live behind her still just chilling there, like looking at, bitch, the fuck? And so literally the tower leans over, like, kind of like, what? So, Joe, what do you think about Building 7, and what does that have to do with the overall landscape, the magical geography of this event?
That's the one that no one can explain. And I feel like anytime someone tries to rebut that question, you know, they people just talk in circles, because I think that's the one that makes no sense. Like, if everything was crazy, and it is, that's the one that there is no answer for, because it would not have, if it caught on fire, it would not have fallen like that. Like, I don't know. I can't say what I think happened, but I can say that what they say happened doesn't make sense.
So you can say a reasonable person would see that just going one step further. If there's BS smoke there, then the other two buildings may have BS smoke coming out of them too.
It doesn't help their case.
Right on. I mean, like, let's just be real. I mean, it's not our business necessarily, the three of us, to go chasing after anyone or two or anyone like that. Like, obviously we support the overall process of justice and wish that goodwill and have the right intentions towards that, and restitution, especially, we should mention, to the families and the victims and the heroes who went in there to help. That is obviously an a priori to the conversation, but we say that now so we can just say that, like, people who do deserve the money kind of are getting some restitution after the John Stewart campaign, as I'll just quickly refer to the overall hard work that so many people did. But, like, what about the people who made it like bandits from this shit and who are just getting away from it? Like, what do we say to that? Just let it go? Like, what happens next?
There's a stock put options that nobody ever looked into. And I mean, the whole stock market thing is impossible to run down because all the stock market records were inside Building 7.
Oops. Joe, thoughts on the fiduciary aspect of this for justice? You know, people who own the towers and such and whatnot and all that jazz?
Yeah, I don't remember clearly, but I do know there was some questionable actions around insurance policies.
I mean, massively questionable if you burned down your house after you got the insurance and such. As above, so below, what?
Yeah, the whole thing is just suspect, because if you're, like, the real estate after, you know, you've cleared that area, and then what did they build? They built the Freedom Tower, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like this whole other thing. And then it increases tourism because you can come to see the monument. It brings even more people down to Wall Street.
Well,
it's a weird, it's, vicious cycle. Whatever happened, it worked out to make more money.
Sold the steel to China for scrap.
Yeah, that's another. Oh my God, what they did with the stuff. Well, I was going to say that it's Jim Booney's free real estate, but that's probably in bad taste. But I don't know how not to do bad taste jokes sometimes. Yeah, man, I think that there's something spooky with the steel that has people's souls possibly trapped in it. If you're familiar with Jenks from Rune Snoop's podcast and his Thai occult series, and Joe, you're right. And actually, Joe, to your point, I think there's by bringing people's energy into there with that focus might do something to the economy on an occult level. I just want to jump back to what you said. But to Jenks and trapping souls and things, that's another interesting aspect. You know that's a part of the Thai occult. You know that's a part of the big, especially like the darker, like trapping like infant souls or unborn children into certain, you know, well, enough of that. But if that's possible at that level in that system, can we not say that there's something to do with trapping them in the steel there, or what's this doing to China? You know, is there some kind of like a cult underground spell weaving thing, or what Joe said about the whole financial bringing traffic there? Alan, what do you think?
They pack bone fragments into potholes. You know, I mean, that city's haunted, man.
It certainly is.
I concur.
You think all that metal is now in our iPhones?
That's ironic. I was trying to say I wasn't trying to cut you off before. now that we've cleared up that I wasn't trying to, I just was trying to desperately make a Jim Booney joke that was tickling me dearly. I mean, how do you not? What about iPhones?
I was making a bad joke that all that metal is now in our iPhones. All the souls have been trapped in our mobile devices.
What if that's what happens to our soul?
I think it already has.
Yeah.
Isn't that true? All right. Well, we solved the universe, folks. Everyone, you can go home. I think that before we'll take a break in a moment, but when we come back, I want us to be thinking about, you know, how it's impacted us personally. I want to think about why these kind of events trigger us on a level of archetypes more than other events. You know, what is it about buildings? What is it about these shapes? And is, I want to talk more about too, just the cultural impact. And of course, we're going to get into the big Simpsons episode, which I think, because you got to just look, I know that people have used those pictures around, but we're going to get into a whole new layer of this Simpsons episode as we come back on the other side of this.
Well, thank you so much for listening thus far. I hope you're getting a lot out of the conversation. It's only going to get better. We're going to dive deeper into that Simpsons synchronicity. There's some really strange stuff in that episode. It's one that you can unpack. There's screen-by-screen shots you could take of that and see. For the symbolically minded gentleman or gentle lady or gentle whomever you may be, you may find some interesting stuff in there, and I'll leave it up to you to whatever your level of symbolic mastery is to decode that to your delight. That being said, we'll talk more about it in this part of the show. This is the Midtro. This is where the donations that are above 50 and below 200 get read. Those all go towards your stats and your growth for your character in the Value for Value RPG. I'm very open to fielding questions about that as well. The system's being built as we move forward, of course, and looking forward to getting some characters in there. Pretty soon, we're going to be seeing people going in different flanks and legions and teams. There's going to be people who are like teams of five and teams of five. I'm going to end up having to break it into different games, but for now, I'm looking forward to getting some players on the board. So guys, don't be shy. Get that coffee and get that player going. I cannot wait to see what happens with this. This is going to be a lot of fun. So thanks for listening, and here we go back into the show. We're going to let them listen? Okay. Yes, you guys can listen. Enjoy the show.
Well, we're talking about like how it's like bringing it down to a personal level and like the different kinds of like how these symbols can be interpreted and like... I think the main goal here, seriously, like, it's fucking, like, everyone's out there talking about everything, and I want, like, what I hope we can bring that's unique and useful is that kind of, like, yeah, there's a ton of different ways to tell a story. The main thing is to think for yourself, and that we need to find cohesion in our group so that we can actually like listen to the people saying that there's nanothermite or this, that, the other thing. And like, you know, I mean, like, it's not all the time in the day, but like we have to at least accept that it's time to start moving in the more open-minded and cohesive direction. That's where we're at right now, I think. I guess I'll like hopefully find a way to cut that into the show.
Yeah, it sounded good.
So I guess we're back now, and we'll just keep going as we do. Joe, like you were watching TV, we'll go in a little bit of reverse order. What exactly was the personal impact to you and to the people around you that you're comfortable to get into tonight on the anniversary?
It's interesting. I haven't really thought about that. I don't remember the way my parents reacted. They were both at work. Oh, I remember my mom was afraid for me to go to, I had started, I guess it wasn't, it was September. So that was actually my first day of college or so. And I was going to a community college. Maybe it wasn't the first day, but that doesn't matter. But I remember she was concerned because she thought that something might happen at the school. I remember thinking that was so absurd. Just like such, I mean, it makes sense now that I'm an adult having that fear for your children, but the idea that whatever nefarious forces were doing that would find their way to like middle of nowhere, Michigan, and would like exact revenge upon college students. Funny thing, in 2019, I would say that'd be a more rational fear than in 2001.
Yeah.
And I guess Columbine had happened already, but still it wasn't like, wasn't like it is now.
The pandemic that we're facing right now with just violence in our society.
Well, you could say it was almost because of 9/11. That was the real, real big one. I mean, the 1993 attempt on the World Trade Center was like one of those weird, like, hey, you know, it's kind of like, prime in the engine, if you will. Yeah, sure. from a ritualistic standpoint, I bet you there was some kind of like resonant harmonic like time frequency skipping stone there, but I digress. So your parents were at work, Joe, and you don't know exactly what their reaction was.
I don't really So my sister's 4 years younger than me. So if I were 18 or 19, she would have been like 14 or 15. And I feel like I vaguely remember her being really shaken up by it. For me, that was when I was in my super like atheist, nihilist stage in life. And besides the initial shock, the fact that it had happened didn't really surprise me. It was more like, of course, you know? But I remember being I remember getting this feeling like in my, you know, just like in your body where I knew that, like you were touching on this earlier, Alan, it's just like, you knew that things were going to be different. I knew that things were never, ever going to be the same again. You know, I immediately started thinking about the retribution. You know, it's like, what are we going to do as a country? Like where, like the violence that we are going to use back. And I mean, and we're still seeing that repercussion today.
Right, almost two decades later.
Yeah, I mean, not only the violence against the people in foreign countries, but like you're talking about with the Patriot Act and the surveillance state. I mean, we're still...
And the police state in general, the militarization of the police force, you know, that's goes hand in hand with the rise of, you know, police shootings.
And to your point, Joe, you said that it was unimaginable then, but now it's imaginable. I mean, I don't have kids, so I don't know what that's like. I think something changes to a person when they have a kid. Alan can attest to that amongst the three of us, I think.
It does.
But
it was all BS until it happened to me.
yeah. And now you're actually responsible for another human. It's not about you, it's about them now. But so to that degree, in effect, yeah. Well, I mean, that I know that conceptually, I don't know that behaviorally, experientially, but so anyways, like, I guess, I mean, we also want to talk about like how these symbols mean so much to the people personally. And you almost see that it's like now feasible because it's like whatever, you know, mental clock we had is like the time to do a thing like this is right at the start of the century. So you can topple a bunch of people down the rest of the line. And now it's imaginable. What are we looking at? The Tower card, right? The Maison Dieu, the House of God. Of course, the Emperor, right? Trump's house. Trump on the Trump card. So
the first thought I had when the event happened.
Oh, was it? Was the Tower card?
Yeah.
Back when Trump was
one of the first things that popped in my mind.
Yeah, well, it's such a, that's what I'm saying. So this is, so I don't want to jump into the archetypes before we get to experience your experience of it. So we heard Joe, his parents, you know, he wasn't quite sure, and he was more of an nihilistic phase. It was like, well, of course war happens. And that was, we've all been in that level of growth. I understand that reaction. I probably could have had it if I were there myself. I was probably just too, well, we'll get to me afterwards. You, what was it like for you and the loved ones you had around you and your friends and people you knew and reactions?
Well, I was in a band at the time, and most of the guys I was playing with were from New York. So you can imagine their reaction. And they're up in arms. They're, you know, Ray, you know, wanted some blood, basically. But it didn't take them long to see which way the wind was blowing afterwards, with the rise of the Patriot Act and the authoritarianism clamping down. And the funny thing was, is, you know, we're a heavy metal band. And at the time, we watched as the Dixie Chicks in France spoke out against the war and lost their careers. And we saw a complete sea change in the whole rock and roll and music industry, and like rebellion wasn't cool anymore.
Rage Against the Machine was taken off.
Music was Americana, and it was all about hot dogs and patriotism and stuff like that.
And freedom fries.
Yep.
Yeah, no, yeah, because Clear Channel was a big thing then, and they took out Rage Against the Machine, and there you go.
See, the FBI investigated System of a Down.
No shit.
Yes.
I don't know if I heard that. It's interesting. That makes sense, though. They were huge then, and they had that whole toxicity. And yeah, so,
There's something about airplanes in one of their lyrics.
Oh, let me see if I can remember that.
I can't remember the lyrics, but there's something about airplanes and weather lyrics.
Well, they do have Jet Pilot. It's the fourth track after Deer Dance, I believe, right before the fifth track, which is X or Multiply. And they say, like, wired were the eyes of a horse to the jet pilot. I forget how it goes. It might be that one. It might be a different one. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, toxicity was definitely kind of like it really felt like that time.
Yeah, you know,
it really, that was one of my favorite albums of that time. No, of course, Lateralis was still Lateralis back then, and that was a big part of that. That was released 6 months before 9/11. Mm-hmm. Now let's get more back into your expression before we get to the archetypes, before we get to Lateralis and all. What was that like for you?
Gas prices went through the roof, and I was in a touring band, so that basically drove us into bankruptcy. We had dates that we were committed to that we had to hit, and so bam, we went into debt just to pay for gas. And then the changes to the music industry and just culture in general. And that was pretty much the peak of my career. That was, you know, when I was doing the most I could at the time I could. And it was weird to see everything just sort of fold up, just completely fold up.
That's like something that people never think about. Like, they think about people's careers being affected. They think about people dying. But there are those trickling tertiary or direct but down the line causative effects that come from that. And you don't think about a guy who's making kick-ass music who can't share it with the world because suddenly the new world order of this current paradigm is like, fuel is here, this kind of music is here. And that's really that's just a shit fortune to run into at the time. It's just from a strictly musical perspective.
We used to play for the guys out at Fort Campbell all the time. So they were like a huge part of our audience.
Damn.
And as soon as they got shipped out, you know, we knew a lot of those kids because they were coming to our shows and we drank beer with them and hung out with them and stuff. And boom, one day they're there and the next day they're gone. That was a big hole all of a sudden, you know, in a lot of people's lives, all those kids just going overseas for, you know, in some cases years and years to come back completely different people.
Yeah, that's some dark, you know, they've been through, you know, hell is not even.
Yeah, yeah. They've been taken advantage of.
Exactly.
My position, my point of view.
Well, I mean, it's such a delicate line because first we have to respect and honor. I mean, there's layers to this. Like, as I see
right.
different, you know, there's.
They're being manipulated with the best instincts for protecting their society and their families.
Right. Because you know? There's that truth. There's that aspect of it, too. There's the real necessary aspect from that angle. Right. So, I mean, and thank you to anyone listening who has served, especially if my Uncle Mark is somehow listening. Thank you. But. Yeah, I really feel like there's not really a place for me to cast any judgment. I don't have besides like I'd rather see people
the world unite.
Right, right, exactly. That's my answer. Is like, and I don't know if astrology or if the world works that way, or if this dream, you know, if the way that we're dreaming this collective world, if it needs to happen. But so it basically, Joe, it impacted you more on a familial, personal. And Alan, it kicked your musical career right in the tukas, as you know. So for me, I guess the way I'm going to bring my story into this is like, I was in high school. It didn't really, I was more concerned with all of the ego drama of my own path and what reality I was in. You know, I saw that stuff going down, but I was pretty much just into art, music, reading, doing video games and such like that. You know, I had my own. And it kind of smoothed over pretty quickly. You know, I mean, it was different. You know, you hear people talking about it, and I was angry for a long time. I had the kill Osama bin Laden patches. Yeah. And I had the whole, you know, I went there, man. I was gung-ho, you know. And then Obama came along, and then that whole phase came, and, you know. And so time moves on. But, you know, the way it struck me personally is that I share this every year. My father was at the way it struck me is, of course, I'm going to say a synchronistic way. My father was at Logan Airport on the day of 9/11 at the time that the planes went out from that very vicinity to then whatever happened, if they got intercepted and taken by military of the deep state or whatever happened to those unfortunate human beings' souls. So what I'm saying is that my dad has a boarding pass from 9/11, and it's like, really, it gives me a slight shiver thinking about how close my father was to that event in that way, in that symbolic manner. I mean, buildings have a meaning. I mean, my dad being at the airport feels strange to me, to say the least. I don't have words really right now to share that I wish I could empathize with, you know, give people a good mirror to hear. But anyways, it's weird. And so, basically, like, you know, there's just all these synchronicities that have been leading up to this that I'd like to like delve into now. But besides the fact that I have my dad's boarding pass, like in the famous example, like we used earlier with our, like you guys mentioned, gosh, what was the pop culture? You guys both mentioned, all I can think of is the Matrix one right now. But anyways, we talked about the different examples of 9/11 being in pop culture. And The Simpsons is one of the big ones. It's got Bart waving money in front of the Twin Towers. And it has a money symbol.
Oh, yeah, I saw that picture earlier.
And it's pretty famous. People can look it up. It's really common. It's something that's, and people don't, when you hear this, I want people who come to the show, like, to understand, like, you don't have to dive down every rabbit hole that comes up to you. You don't have to pick, you know, what's a famous, like, what's a great good Zen master quote would say, like, you don't have to accept every invitation to every fight that you're invited to, or something to that effect. And so all I'm saying is not every rabbit hole is worth, you only have so much time. You have a purpose that's your own.
Pick your battles.
Exactly, right. So anyways, Bart, this is a good battle to go to. And this one is where Bart's waving money in front of this sign that says 9/11. It's got like a bus trip. And given that I just got back from New York, and given that I just was taking a bus trip back from New York, and, you know, the cannon box, as I mentioned, doing the Empire, and we're talking about the Empire State, and you better believe that whatever, I was at the Metaphysics of Desire workshop with Gordon White and Langston Kahn, and it was beautiful, and the people there were wonderful, and the Saturday night working was wonderful, and the whole thing was great. So I'm finding all these crazy synchronicities, and it relates back to Tool, no less. I have this Australian Tool CD that has the Astaroth sigil on it. Suffice to say that there's some huge magic going on as we speak. So what we're trying to tie in is how we can move forward cohesively with 9/11, but let's also bring in the true magic aspect of this. So up in New York, we have the symbol of the Empire, right? What is one of the main things that Tool talks about? Because now we've tied Tool into this through the Astaroth sigil and through the fact that they have the collar on the 9/11. All right, let's get this straight. Let's get the sentence so it has the proper grammar in the right order, guys. And thank you for bearing with me. And then it's time to turn the mic over for thoughts. But here's the kicker. You got the idea in the song Fi Up Day Awad, right? We're talking about portals in 9/11. You're talking about this being maybe another... Well, anyways, so basically, we have this guy calling into Art Bell frantically, freaking out. It's a famous caller, and he's talking about how he's escaped from Area 51, this, that, the other thing, Bob's your uncle, thank you very much, Governor. So he's got this freak out going on, and he's talking about this shit to Art Bell, but it's on 9/11, 1997, that this call takes place, right? So... Tool makes use of this guy's call, and it's relevant to the portals and the magical aspect of 9/11 as a ritual working. And you realize that in that same year was the Simpsons episode, both in 1997. And then it gets crazier because the film Midnight in the Garden of Good and Evil is one to dig into for symbolism when it comes to 9/11, I'll share, also in 1997. So there's something about 1997... as some, I think, kind of like yearly harmonic. And it was 4 years prior, if I'm doing my maths correctly. And in Chinese and other 12-based calendar systems, four-based harmonic is often a, what is that? Is that a sextile at least? Or what are we looking at there, a trine?
Well, if you're talking about four signs around the zodiac, that's a square.
So if it's every four, it's a square then?
Yep.
All right. So if, yeah, so like we're...
Two,
we're,
three, and then, wait. No, it'd be a trine.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
It was every four, so yeah.
Okay. Yeah, it would be the opposite with like every three. Anyways, the astrology nerds listening to this are like, oh my God, look at, listen to these guys. Noobs! You are noobs! It's true. That's true. So the point is that it's a definite harmonic resonant, okay, if we think about it in that term. And I just want to bring that aspect of thinking into this because it's something about 1997. And I wouldn't be surprised if that were the year that Lone Gunman's pilot, no pun intended, came out. And, of course, that was their pilot, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was.
Year did
the pilot?
Isn't that cute?
What year did Nelson Mandela supposedly die in prison?
Oh, where are we going with this? Oh, yeah, I'm sorry, you guys. I've been talking a lot. I did not expect myself to do that, but anyways. You guys hog the mic for a while, please.
I was just making a really high-octane joke. I was presupposing that it'd be funny if 1997 was the year that people said that Nelson Mandela died in prison. And that would signify that it was the beginning of the Mandela effect, or Mandela effect.
Yeah, I think it was like 87 or something. Yeah, like that.
I hold no faith in that statement.
Right on, brother.
The Mandela effect doesn't require faith. It's just how you remember it, man.
Yeah.
Can I say that it was 2001? That's even better than 97. The Lone Gunman came out in 2001.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and 93% liked the show. Just throwing that out there. Dean Haglund, Bruce Harwood, Tom Braidwood. I'm sorry to whichever you guys, I forgot your name. I love all three of you.
God bless you.
They're literally a huge part of my childhood.
Such a good show, X-Files, and that the season they got for The Lone Gunman was pretty entertaining too.
You know what? I haven't even seen it yet, but we just watched the episode of The Lone Gunman because I think Mulder, like, I think David Duchovny was doing something. Mm-hmm. So they did like a spinoff show, I think, like, and it was all like The Lone Gunman. It was the one where they set up that storyline with Suzanne where she's trying to find her daughter, but it turns out that, anyways, great episode. But yeah, those guys are cool cats. Anyways, so
that's why we're all here, probably. Those guys.
Oh my God! What if we are the Lone Gunmen tonight, my friends? I know which one of us is Dean Haglund. Okay, dude, you're Frohickey Joe. I'll be Byers, I guess. All right. So now we're Scully.
Got my 20 cider sitting right over there.
I got the other video. I got the other 8 vantages of JFK getting shot over here, so we're good. Anyways, it's amazing what you can get on Alibaba. Anyways, so Joe, what can we like do to move this conversation forward cohesively? Like, what's a good conversational tactic when people start? Whoa, he does. Hey, roll one for us to see what the percentage of, if we roll above 10, we can fix this conversation, I think. But anyways, yeah, Joe, what's something that we can do that? Like to get people past the BS. Excellent, brother.
To get people, okay, so like the metaphorical conversation.
Well, for real, like if we're talking with some like people who are just straight up like, you know, it's kind of, we can even tie it how you talk about magic because it's the same conversation in the end.
Yeah, I mean, it's really hard to convince someone to be open-minded. And I think that's like the question that we're, that's like the thing we're kind of dancing around because
it's part of it.
It's like the I think the big problem is that this type of thing is hard to think about. It's very uncomfortable. It makes you question a lot of things. And that, I mean, that's 9/11. That's magic. That's any that's type of like
Plato's cave.
Yeah. And it's like, you don't even want to be like pretentious about it. You know, it's like, there's no, you know, you can't, I always kind of revert back to the, I think it's the Cho Young Trumpa. He's I'll paraphrase it poorly here, but he talks about like, if you can avoid walking down this path, avoid it because there's no going back. Essentially, you know, it's like, if you're not called to this life, like, mm-hmm. you know, don't chase it. And I mean, I think that people should do it, but I think that's, it's like kind of the essence of what, you know, it's like, how do we talk to someone about this? And I don't know, like try to be rational, you know, but that like, doesn't it mean make excuses for strange things either? And I think that's a hard one with magic or the occult or conspiracy. It's like, I feel like we constantly backpedal, or at least yeah, I do. I can say I do. And it's like making excuses for things that, because you're trying to, for me myself, I'm always trying to like pad the conversation, you know, like you don't want to freak people out.
You know? Well, that raises a good point, because while you're saying that, and Al, I'm going to pass this to you, because in magic, we do have the axiom, or as I like to call them, maxims, axioms, portmanteau. It's cute. Maxims. Sounds cool, baby. When you look into these things, you have the to know, to will, to dare, to be silent. So maybe like also we're like, you should never ever tell people your plans kind of thing, basically. Like, so everyone who's like trying to waste time on what people might call profane, you know, like, or people who are like, you know, they, you know, that's their thing. That's not where you want to spend your time. It's best to avoid that completely and let that energy pass by us. Is that a whole other way to look at this conversation and say that we should just speak amongst the magically minded and pool out energy so that we can do better things like that? Is that a way to look at this?
There's an aspect to magic and the whole 9/11 thing that's like having the rug pulled out from under you if you're not used to these kinds of things. All of a sudden, people are telling you that reality's upside down. things are completely different than what you're used to and what you deal with on a day-to-day basis. And I guess that's the real trick, is to, if you're going to ease someone into this worldview, you have to, there is an element of it that requires the rug to be pulled out from under you so you can have that experience and see what the world looks like from upside down. But there is a way to do that without, you know, there's an ethical way to do it. Don't ask me what that is. I have no idea. I'm a solo practitioner, so, you know,
I have no idea what that would be. It's a fair caveat, because I think that all of us have ultimately our own responsibility to our own reality. But I think the overarching message is, even to people who, let's say we strike a balance, we pool most of our time doing work amongst our friends who are solo practitioners, but, you know, when we congregate, it's mostly amongst like-mindeds. But at the same time, we remain open in empathetic White Lodge manner to try to help those who show at least a willing effort at giving themselves a shot towards evolution. And for what you might call, some unkindly would say NPCs, or maybe some would kindly say NPCs, depending on their level of how, Jesus, wow, really? I mean, and I can act very absentmindedly, but there's a difference between acting absentmindedly from your purpose and from just following no matter what. You're literally the Pink Floyd children on the conveyor belt, and I can't say there's much room for moving left or right on a conveyor belt. You're done, you're cooked. So in the middle, between the two extremes is where we find the happy medium. And I think that the conversation would just be about, look, ultimately we have to be adults here. We have to keep our tempers even, and we have to, it's not just about facts, because the facts are so nebulous, as we've covered. It's more about just coming to what story can we use to move forward so that this no longer traumatizes us, and so that we can get a grip on what needs to be done day to day now to fix the problems that are in our real lives, not only in cleaning up the emotional trauma that happened from the event, because we can now face the shadow aspects of that, but so now that we can also hand in hand fix the problems that we are having just, you know, today, whatever that happens to be. That's, I'm just talking now. I'm making this up, but this is something I think that we should do. Maybe. Yeah.
It's almost like you need to look for people who have the itch. You know how, like, when you meet someone, you can kind of tell.
I honestly have the itch.
I'm like, yeah.
We're not talking about that kind of itch either.
Yeah, it's something about a person. Like, when you meet strangers, and you, like, how do you know that they're into the weird shit? I don't know. But I think that to initiate someone into the weird, you know, like, they have to want it a little bit, like with masonry, you know. Mm-hmm. You can't just go around and, like, bring a mason in. Like, the mason has to come willingly.
Which brings a lot of things to, like, the nature of, like, the higher aspect of this reality and the teachers appearing. You know, I was at the bank yesterday just trying to, you know, just do some bankety banks, you know. What I did was I started talking to this girl, just like there was some comment, and just something led to another, and, you know, JJ's there with me, and we're just talking with her about Twin Peaks suddenly, this, that, the other thing. She's telling us about this band named Gemini Syndrome I've never heard of. Just this girl who looks like, you know, she's just there at the bank, you know, bankety. I think I said banky sinks. I think that's what they're doing to all of us. They're draining us. I think it was just, I heard it too, folks. So the point is that, this girl was just, you know, normal, looked like whatever, like you would think, like, yeah, but she was, I think people are starting, a big part of a reason that we're talking about this, I think people are starting to get, like, the general people are starting, and maybe it's because the pop culture is so full of conspiracy, so-called, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think, like 9/11 is a mainstream one.
Pretty much. Yeah. Big Family Guy's like 9/11. I'm like, wow. At the time, it was like uncomfortable, and I think that actually was a watershed moment in the psyche, but Simpsons and Family Guy do that kind of thing.
That kerosene doesn't melt steel beams is a meme.
Yeah.
Oh my God, that's one of my favorite ones.
Yeah,
like,
me too.
That horse. It's no. What is it like? The it's like. Oh man, there's this one with this horse. I forget. The horse just like just walks up and it's like. Oh yeah, that horse can talk. It's like. Oh my God, a talking horse. And he walks up to it says everything. It says jet fuel can't melt steel. I love it. So, anyways, oh by the way. Another good meme is when the you know that one with the dudes with his girlfriend looking back at the hot chick?
Yeah.
And the hot chick's got Medusa snake hair and he's turned to stone. The reason I bring that one up is that Medusa Touch it's relevant to the Medusa Touch story, which is a prologue of archetypal resonance with the pilot of the Lone Gunman with a plane flying into a building, right?
Right.
So that's actually, that idea has been around since like at least 73, if not, you know, in a missile going into it. Like, but let's bring it back around.
Well, World War II, the Japanese flew planes into carriers and stuff, and they were afraid that they were going to do it to the White House. So they hardened the White House against a kamikaze attack from an airplane. So we've been hardening our buildings against attacks from planes being driven into them. It's been part of our architectural thinking since World War II.
Hardcore, yeah, seriously. And I mean, like, you had all those movies like with Independence Day? 97 was like, I'm jumping around 97 because I think it's relevant and I hope we bring that to the table too. It was, because 97 was Independence Day, which, I mean, there's that aliens thing again, but I think that the buildings, and that was all New York City, was one of the big aspects of that film.
Well, the alien thing is like an aspect of the others pushing through, and that's the other thing that we've been beating around here is the archetypes coming out to play.
Mm.
And, you know, the portal may not be opening from our side. It may be opening from their side.
Yep, exactly. Yeah, and I mean, like, that whole thing with, like, Mario Bros. Using the whole, like, Trade Center towers, we'd be remiss if we didn't mention that. With the other King Koopa looking like Trump, Hopper, wake a vault tonight, folks, I'm telling you, he's playing King Koopa, who looks just like Trump, and he's the King of New York, or... You know, Super Mario Bros. What is it? You know, Brooklyn. Yeah, of course, Brooklyn, Manhattan, same thing. You know, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles territory. And the whole idea is that the two towers like get destroyed in one of the scenes, and it has KK on it. This whole thing gets deep if you look into the Simpsons episode. I really want to touch on some of that stuff, but there's like stuff that I don't want to touch on, and I'm not going to go there. But anyway, so like. There's aspects of this that like have resonance all over. And in Mario, the two buildings get destroyed, and it's strange because you can almost see what looks like a plane flying into it. And this is 1993, which is the same year as the World Trade Center tower attacks that happened. So like, I mean, like this shit's like bubbling up. We're in the dream. Like we are in a dreaming reality. You and I, all three of us, any of us could have said you and I, all three of us and everyone listening to this, we are dreaming this reality together. This is a co-created reality, and something about the numbers 911 and how they fit in and what the archetypal resonance was, and just the idea of you call this for an emergency, and this is New York, this is the big, highest, biggest epic echelon, and look, 1-2, twins, mirrors, twin peaks in the sky, epic skyline. It's in everyone's minds, right? Everyone. Madonna is the biggest pop singer. She's from she's from Manhattan. She's from New York. I couldn't even say it. But so she's the queen. I mean, besides Michael Jackson, same birthday as Liz Frazier, August 29th, we have David Bowie, who's basically the king, and he's a New York guy. So you have these archetypal resonances of like the new empire, the new royalty. So it's something attacking the empire, right? I mean, it literally didn't blow up the Empire State Building, but it was another resonance of the empire. So, I mean, like that's a whole other twist on this whole thing too, right? I mean, is that like the inside using outside tactics for the inside? I mean, or is that way too simplified, right? Joe, why don't you give us some Robert Anton Wilson?
I think that it's it's almost like there's, if we had to look at it synchromistically, which, you know, of course we will, but it's like 9/11 is telling us that we're no longer safe anymore.
Uh-huh. That's, you know, brilliant.
Like, there's no, like, and then, like, we're talking about the militarization of the police. You know, it went from the police being someone that can help you to, like, them, they are now, you know, almost like a paramilitary, in at least in appearance and in some people's opinions.
In Super Mario Bros., like, it makes me think of the Goombas.
Yeah. Yeah. Just like the stormtroopers.
Right.
We had to say it because that's accurate. As you would say, that's true.
It's
archetypally one of the things that sticks out to me that's just coming to me is the Twin Towers are a double-bodied building, and we're walking out on the end of the age of Pisces right now, which is called a double-bodied sign. So you have the Twin Towers and you have a double-bodied sign ending, and it's the coming down of old structures, the curtain dropping and the new age coming in. It's a period on the end of the age of Pisces. And what we're seeing now is, you know, we're entering the equinox, and that's a new age, and it's not Piscean, it's Aquarian. And we're seeing the end of hero worship. All of these old structures, all of these old Piscean forms are going down. And I think that's one of the things that's going on with cancel culture is, like, you know, who are you to be elevated above everybody else? It's a great equalization. It's an atomization of society, which is one of the things that the Aquarian Age is going to be all about, is this atomization of us into the clouds of air.
That's intense, dude.
Yeah, that's really intense.
I think that we just mentioned David Bowie, and if you guys have seen season 3 of Twin Peaks, Clouds of Air might be what David Lynch is trying to get at. But sorry, brother, go ahead.
Where was I going with that?
Clouds of Air.
No, it was before that. It was
Aquarian Pisces ending of age.
Oh, it was, yeah. And you see the fanaticism that surrounds Trump and, like, what he represents, kind of like the opposite of the death of hero worship. You know, the people that hold on to him as a savior, like the God Emperor, kind of a...
Doesn't everyone do that with every political... Isn't that like the act of outsourcing your own efficacy as an individual into that, like, single figurehead? I'm sorry, no, I don't mean to, like... But I just would like to, like... That seems like that comes to mind to me. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I just don't think we've ever seen it, the likes of this.
Really? With Obama? Like, I thought he looked... They pretty much, like, canonized the dude. Like, I voted for him.
They definitely did, but I think the fervor is different.
Well, I don't know. I think that... I remember, like, when I voted for him in 2008, I've done all three colors, so I don't have any... I'm just like, yeah, oh my God. Anyways, none of anyone's business, I suppose, at this point. But the point is that I think that they did a similar thing. I think it happens again and again. I don't think it's that odd.
There's a certain type of violence that's associated with right now. And I think that makes things different feeling.
I mean, you're right. People getting punched in the streets, like in Boston, that happened.
And in relation to what you're saying about the death of heroes, you know, it's like, who is cancel culture going after predominantly? I would say it's going after kind of like the right-leaning pundits. I mean, it's happening to everyone, obviously, but...
It is. I mean, even ContraPoints is getting hit these days, and
that's true.
She's, you know, one of the leading spokespeople of the left.
I haven't read Counterpoint or Counterpunch or what?
ContraPoints.
Oh, I was thinking of Counterpunch. I haven't read that.
She has an interesting YouTube channel where she discusses philosophy and modern issues from an LGBTQ angle.
Is she getting censored?
She's getting hit by her own aspects of her own community. It's really kind of outside of my experience, so I don't feel comfortable speaking
naturally
specifically out there. It's happening out there right now. So if you want to know what's going on, just get on Twitter or Google. And
my drama avoidance is like one of, it's in my chart. I drama is not part of my, that's, I literally, it's oil and water with my existence.
I kind of avoid it myself.
Yeah, man. I mean, like, we're trying to be efficacious in this world and help people. You got to keep your engine clean.
I think one of the points is of cancel culture is that it's that end of hero worship. It's that, you know, it's I'm not saying it's positive and I'm not saying negative. I'm just saying it's a thing that is. It's
I appreciate that.
Bubbling up, you know.
I watched Suicide Squad yesterday, point in fact, actually, synchronistically, right? Because you know we're going to have to bring the – it's how we do here. Like, I think it gets silly at a certain point. If we're going to say that we're into, like, magic and the occult, to be so wowed and cowed and towed by synchronicity and, you know, the manifestations of – it's kind of like at a certain point, it's like, well, of course. This is what it does. This is what the dream does. So if there's some way we can heal 9/11 through what we've done tonight a little bit, whatever that means to heal, what a sentence, right? Oh, you could vault. You know, the cynical people out there are like, oh, you forgot the comma. It's like, oh, it's a heal 9/11. Oh, what does that even mean? Was 9/11 and a quarter being nipple jumped with electrodes? You know what I mean? So anyways, the point is that I think that it's important that we actually do bring some healing, not only to like the people who have gone through hell and who have literally, you know, breathed in whatever cancerous crap came from that, what probably was charged. Like, I mean, maybe that the stuff that they breathed in was coming from the explosives that brought down the buildings. I don't know, is maybe the question asked, because if that's the unique factor in the fact that the things came down, hypothetically speaking, not even saying that's real, right? Cough. Then maybe that's the factor that gave the people the cancer that doesn't come from the breathing and the dust of the air. I'm just speculating off the top of my head because I have no idea. You know what I mean? So anyways, before we go tonight, let's really try to just have some fun with some just random stuff. Let's just bring it home like we like to do with the pleasure aspect of the Six of Cups. What are we listening to lately, gentlemen? Alan, what are you listening to lately?
Alton Gunn. They're a folk band playing Turkish funk music.
Whoa,
it's just amazing.
Oh my god, dude, I'm just getting tingles.
It's like psychedelic, funky, and it's ancient. These songs are so old nobody even speaks the language that it's sung in anymore. It's beautiful, wonderful music that makes you want to party and have fun and just feel good.
Am I not glad that I asked this question? Oy, Gavalt, thank you. I'm looking forward to this. When I can. You know, I'm my whole Kate Bush, Lola Jesus, Pharmacon, Madonna. Wait, I'm going to finish this. Who else are my other two? Kate Bush, Madonna, Liz Fraser, Pharmacon. Who's my other one that I'm listening to? Does anyone remember at this point? My girlfriend's going to run in here and yell it at me soon. Oh, my God. This is my own self-imposed womb that I'm doing
here. It's a Kate Bush, right?
I said Kate Bush, Bjork, Madonna, Pharmacon, Lola Jesus. And wow, I'm having this weird psychic blank, guys. This is
Liz Fraser.
Did I say? I thought. I kept thinking. I said her.
You've named all three. You've named all of them, but differently each time you named them.
See, this is what it's like to. Okay, so this is okay. So, anyways, none of the bands of them I'm talking about can I listen to besides that. So yeah, I'll listen to Turkish one when I can. So, anyways, Joe, how about you? And thank you.
I've been, to be honest, I've been just listening to a lot of audiobooks lately, but when I do, like when I need a break, I'd recently found out about this whole, like the Doomer meme. It's the, he's kind of got like stubble, smoking a cigarette, got often with like a skull cap on, and he's like the NPC kind of character almost. And it's just like the whole idea is kind of just like a kind of gothy nihilist, like things didn't work out for him.
I've seen this meme before.
Right. And people started making playlists of like Doomer music, and it's just excellent. Like, you know, Slow Dive, Roxy Music, The Smiths, Joy Division. And so, I mean, that, and that's like my wheelhouse. Those are my, that's my favorite music.
Is there Cocteau Twins? Is there Peter Murphy on there?
I'm sure people just make
Echo in the Bunny
Bauhaus.
Bauhaus, exactly. Yeah.
But,
Nails should be on there without a doubt.
Yes, they are.
Oh man.
But they have playlists called Russian Doomer Mixes.
What?
And it's just like, it's all Russian post-punk. So it's the best version of post-punk. Because like that ex-Soviet, like just like downer vibe is so, it's so palpable. I would recommend.
You're not wrong. I've heard some music from there. Oh my God. I forget. It was actually probably a famous film that everyone knows, but it's this girl saying that she just sits and stares at the TV on her ceiling or something. Oh my God, dude. Anyways, intense Russian punk. Might be Ukraine, but whatever. Sorry, Alan. Were you going to say something, Alan?
I'm nodding along and agreeing. I'm loving
this. I never like to miss new musical info, so I'm like, no, really? Were you going to say something? Tell me. That's how some of the coolest things happen. That's how also Captain Beef. Anyways, so let's do one more round of music for each of us, or for you guys. Oh, you know what? I'll throw what I'm listening to. Fair is fair. Wait, y'all already know. So anyways, I guess I did already. Today I shared, what was it? That's a Madonna song, Instant Impact. Yeah, the second track off of her, the album that came out right before 9/11, that she basically had to like do some weird turnaround with her dates for the Drowned World tour. So, also there was like some weird thing where she was doing a show on September 9th and September 11th or something like that. So you can look into that. There's something there. But, so next thing about music, I want to ask you guys, what's the weirdest, rarest music you've heard, Alan?
Oh, well, there's John Zorn and the Sacred Light, which is really interesting stuff. John Zorn in general, he does a lot of really avant-garde stuff.
Yeah, he has that Ipsissimus album, right?
Traditional Jewish music to avant-garde jazz. And then there's some other weird stuff that people might have heard of, like, you know, Nurse with Wound, Controlled Bleeding, just really out there kind of things that are more playing with how we perceive sound than actually creating harmony and melody, things like that.
So that's the weirdest out there kind of stuff, because I can see why, definitely, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's not what you would call a relaxing, pleasing listening experience.
It's kind of like if Ween and the Boredoms like was played backwards with metal being run through a blender.
It's kind of like the audio track to Eraserhead.
Oh my God, dude. That's probably the sound that the Atomic Blast made when it ripped a hole through the veil.
Yeah, a lot of it's industrial hell noises, clanging metal, steam sounds, that sort of thing.
I mean, Lou Reed's Metal Machine music is what I use to nurse my kids to sleep in the future, but for now, banishing all that nonsense, Joe, weird music. Tell us your weird music.
There's a handful of compilations out called, I think it's called Guitars of the Golden Triangle, and it's like a, it's like 1960s kind of like poppy rock from all the islands in that area. So a lot of just like Pacific Asian islands. I'm drawing a blank and giving you a country right now, but
like Polynesia and such,
like more Asian than that. So probably like Indonesia,
Malaysia.
Yeah, exactly. And rumor has it that tape was really hard to come by back then. So people would record their music in kind of like fast. They would record it faster and then play it back slower. So it has this really strange effect. And when they've converted it over to like MP3 or digital format, you know, it's played at the the speed that, you know, it's like a direct copy. So it's just got this really kind of like otherworldly sound to it. You know, it adds this weird layer of kind of like the unknown, because you don't know exactly what's going to happen. Like all the little ticks and things that go wrong when you're recording, you know, multi-track music on one track. It's wild.
And it's called Guitars of the Golden Triangle?
Yeah, I believe that's what it's, I'm fairly certain that's what it's called.
I'm going to have to check both of these out, like, yeah, post-haste.
I found out about it from, there's this old radio show out of Manhattan called Chances with Wolves.
I like that.
Yeah, it was a couple hour long podcast where their whole goal was to never play the same song twice. So, and it's just like, it's everything in the, it's the most outrageous thing I'd ever heard in my life, because it's literally, it's every single type of music you could imagine. You know, it's like world music and like underground hip hop and like weird covers of Beatles songs.
I want you to let me interject to say something.
Please.
Because you mentioned hip hop, and if I don't mention this now, I will forget. Throughout the conversation this evening, I have been meaning to bring up Sage Francis. He wrote Makeshift Patriot about, I remember the story goes about 2 weeks after 9/11. He was pretty damn quick. By October 10th or so, he had the song ready, I'm sure. But the whole song is an accurate write-up of what happened on 9/11 from our kind of perspective. You know, when a typically dark-skinned Disney villain used civilians against civilians and crashed the Trojan horses into the buildings, using commercial aviation as instruments of destruction, it's a very good song talking about Makeshift Patriot. The flag shop is out of stock. I hang myself at half mast, you know. So he's talking about the whole country going into the frenzy, going into the brainwash, and he just accurately portrays it as a poet would at the time. So I just wanted to mention that, speaking of underground hip hop.
Cool.
But so weird music we've got down. I'll add my own weird music. I've been giving John Jacob Niles a big shout out. Of course, Clara Rockmore is very good. The former's an Appalachian balladeer. My Precarious Life in the Public Domain is a collection of some of the finest songs available for anyone who's into really good music. And Clara Rockmore, of course, is the renowned theremin player, which you should, I'm talking just to the listener, to anyone, you should listen to some good theremin to get like that. There's that weird sense of the unreal, ethereal that Brother Joe is bringing with Golden Triangles, fittingly. But yeah, and I'll say one last weird music. The work of Rosicrucian composer Eric Satie is unmissable, but I'm flipping it around here. There's a composer from about 1400s, 1300s named John Taverner. There's a modern composer, Taverner. This guy, I believe, has an R in the name. You want to look up his motets, Motet Missi Sanctissima. I can't even. It's a bunch of Latin beautiful things. Just look up the different motets, M-O-T-E-T, for different amounts of voices. Motet for five voices. This is music to listen to on a Sunday especially. But what I'm sharing with you, this John Taverner, look this guy up, look up his music, enjoy it, play back. This is some of the most beautiful music you'll ever hear in your life. And you will thank me. I promise you, you listening now, my friends, Alan and Joe here, they're going to thank me. This is good music. And now I'm selling things. So anyways, that's the weird music. Any final thoughts on the show before we tie the show all together? Any final thoughts about like the events of the day or anything you guys want to share that seems like you might want to say it now that might be like synchronistically relevant, like anything that comes to mind from the, you know, the place.
I would say never forget how crazy the flag sales were. You mentioned that in the song. I can't believe that we didn't even touch on that. That was Do you remember how surreal that was?
Everything was like festooned with flags.
Yeah, cars with like four flags, one on each window. Uh-huh. Trucks with American flags stuck to broomsticks. Like,
and now no one even cares.
Where I live, there's still flags being flown on the back of pickup trucks.
Really?
Oh yeah.
Seems to me that the whole thing has moved past. So like, my point with that is saying that we were inundated with it so much that it burned it out in our consciousness. Instead of burning it in there, it burned it out. So, oh, sorry, Alan, go ahead.
It's part of the background now, you know? It's just this jingoism, just this pointless, empty gesture now.
That's what I'm trying to say by that. I'm not saying that it's gone away. I'm saying that it's gone away.
Yeah.
Like, it went way. Maybe I have to explain it that way. It went way. And I know that you know what I mean by that in this context. I don't know what to say besides that, like, makes me think of how they recalled the shoes with the Betsy Ross flags on them and such. You know, I mean, like,
mm-hmm.
that. Yes, there was a ton of flag sales, and it was very, I mean, you know, if Rome's on fire, sell fire extinguishers. I don't, someone do a better metaphor. But that's a good business to be in when the thing's on fire. Anyways, mm-hmm. So, Alan, any other thoughts?
Just thanks for letting me do this. This felt good getting a lot of this out and talking about this. This is good for me, definitely. So I appreciate the opportunity to be here and talk.
Yeah. It's been strange. I listened to your guys' episode today. So it's really strange to be in conversation like 8 hours later.
Right.
It's like the podcast didn't end.
Well, Alan, it's lovely to have you here. First of all, to address directly what you said, like, I invited you here because I like having you in the mix, I guess, because I'm trying to incorporate what Joe said, which is that, yeah, I mean, like, I feel like, you know how I do. My first response was, and you will come to find that we are all one mind, capable of all imagined and all conceivable. So that's my response to that. Like, of course you listen to the show and such. I don't even know if you knew that Alan was going to be on the show today.
I don't remember.
I know how that goes. I mean, if you did, then you got Mingala. I mean, Mandela affected. So in any event, Jesus, right? Fuck me, dude. Like, pardon my language. But honestly, we can end on this last note here. Mm-hmm. Like, no matter what we said tonight, in the other universe where Trump was, like, elected on 9/11 and 9/11 happened on 11/9, all that matters is all that mirror world backwards speak. And, you know, that backwards, I'm glad Joe mentioned the backwards thing, because, like, you know, there's probably like a ramification in the other dimensions from the reverberations on this. And if we're all part of that dimension, I wonder how weird it got up there for us. That's our parting thoughts tonight, ladies and gentlemen. Next show, we're going to have the Bigfoot, Sasquatch, and the Yeti with the split personality disorder. And we're going to, oh, sorry. That's the other show. Sorry. Anyways, guys, thank you so much for being here. I really value your input. I feel like we've done some good work tonight. So, Alan, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
And brother Joe DeZerman, I also thank you.
Thank you, guys. It was a pleasure.
And with that, we shall end the show. Thank you, guys. And seriously, on a final note, God bless all the families. Honestly, everyone who was impacted directly, first of all, but to anyone who this hurt or impacted, like, my dad has his boarding pass from 9/11, and I'm, you know, I mean, it was weird to see SK Baines also share my dad's passport as a final note, but I'll say that there's some magic in the air, and for all of us, if you were impacted, not only God bless you, but, like, you're an aware creature. It's not enough to say, like, never forget. It's like, always remember, you're a conscious being. You're a soul in a human body. Don't let the trauma override your programming. Don't let it program you. And always remember that you are able to think for yourself, question authority, become your own gatekeeper of your own reality and be good to people around you. Because if this sucks because it was traumatic, you know the direction to walk away from, you know the direction to walk in, and you know that ultimately we're here to do whatever good work it is. So just turn towards that great bending arc towards justice. Right on. All right, guys, that's the end of the show.
Thank you so much for listening to episode 9 of the Six of Cups. This was a episode that was heavy at times, but I feel like for the most part, we really did a good job of just processing right through what could have otherwise dragged us down. I'd like to say that we really did a good job alchemically changing that energy so that we can move forward. And we're just one few minutes talking out of the eternities of time. And I hope that this energy injection does spin some positive upward spirals and that other people are. Maybe the next time the Deccans wheel around one more time and the sun comes back to this period and we're at next year's 2029-11, conversations move forward and people are talking less about the fake stuff, more about the real stuff, and talking more about how it affects us on a real level and how we can change that and not only heal ourselves but begin that outward ripple pattern that I believe really needs to start coming from all of this. So with that being said, thank you so much. You can donate at occultfan@paypal.com, or that's occultfan@gmail.com. And any other things that you have that you want to see on the show, feel free to reach out to me. You can find us on the Six of Swords Discord, and that covers the Six of Swords, Six of Cups, Six of Wands, and Six of, well, you'll see. But thank you very much for listening, and I look forward to sharing more time with you in the future. So cheers.